today on Family Talk.
Well, welcome everyone to this Friday edition of Family Talk. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and today's program, like all the others that we air, are produced by James Dobson Family Institute. Thank you for joining us today and for standing with this ministry. You know, in the last 100 years, there's been a growing hatred toward religion around the world, especially Christianity. Jesus said it would be that way. He said, "In this world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, because I've overcome the world." According to research compiled by the organization Open Doors, 1 in 9 Christians around the world experiences persecution. And since the year 2017, over 4,100 followers of Christ were killed for their faith, and another 2,600 falsely imprisoned. That's probably an understatement, because we don't know all the persecution that's taking place. But those are sad statistics. And as I said, the killing and the persecution are at an even greater pace today. Well, today we're going to talk about that and let you listen to a conversation that featured a couple that has experienced this severe suffering firsthand. Their names are Andrew and Noreen Brunson. You may recognize them from the headlines following Andrew's release from a Turkish prison by the Trump administration. In a moment, you're going to hear an interview with the Brunsons that was conducted by my colleague, Dr. Tim Clinton, who recorded it at the 2019 Western Conservative Summit. Andrew and Noreen will talk about Andrew's unjust trial and subsequent time in prison. My prayer is that this broadcast will move you, frankly. We all need to be concerned about it and will open your eyes to the problem of persecution that's still going on globally. Here now is Dr. Tim Clinton on this edition of Family Talk.
You know, Jesus told us that our walk as followers would not be easy. Some would be criticized, despised, hated, in some circumstances, tortured, beaten, and even killed. I think it's hard to even think that way in today's world, but it's happening. It's absolutely no surprise that there is a startling rise in persecution toward the church around the world. Some of you may remember the story of a pastor who was unfairly detained in Turkey in 2016. Praise God, when not long ago he was able to return to the United States after 2 years in captivity. Our guest today is that faithful servant and his wife, who have gone through those harrowing events to remain committed to sharing the gospel of Christ. His name, Pastor Andrew Brunson, his wife, Noreen. Pastor Brunson is the founder of İzmir Resurrection Church in Turkey, where he served for 23 years. Pastor Brunson's highly anticipated new book coming out this fall, God's Hostage. He's married again to his wife, Noreen, who is here. They have 3 children. Thank you both for taking special time to join us here on Family Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Pastor Brunson, Noreen, I want to go back to just a moment in your life. You know, there are moments that are really special. But you guys had a moment, and that moment to me was when finally someone came into you and said, "You're free." What was that like for you?
Actually, it was the end of an hour of hell, because I was in the courtroom and things had moved very quickly towards convicting me, which we had not expected at that point. And so we realized that I was going to be convicted. The judges were going to pass sentence on me, and I didn't know.
Which could have meant what?
We didn't know exactly how many years in prison they'd give me, but it would be certainly sending me back to prison is what I expected. This was sudden, unexpected. Our lawyer had assured us that trials in Turkey often take several years. He said, "We're just not at that point. We haven't been able to present a defense or anything like that. And so there's no way that they will, you know, convict you and send you to prison today." But they moved very quickly. They didn't allow us to make a defense, to present a defense. And so I'm standing before the judge, and I hear him saying, you know, Andrew Brunson is basically guilty of supporting terrorist groups.
Horrifying.
And I start thinking, am I going to get to go back to the same cell I was in before and the maximum security prison I was in? Or are they going to put me in a completely new place with new people? How is this going to work? How am I going to survive this emotionally, spiritually? And then I kind of came back when someone's saying, you're free. I said, what?
Wow.
Free to what? And my lawyer said, you have been convicted. They've given you a sentence, but then they've said they will release you with time served while you appeal. And they've lifted your travel ban so you can leave the country.
Noreen, what was it like for you?
Actually, just to back up a little bit, he had been on house arrest and coming up to this fourth trial. And
I was in prison for quite a while, 22 months, and then they let me out on house arrest.
In Turkey.
Yes.
In Turkey. This was after President Trump really pushed hard. And then they put me on house arrest while they continued my trial. So for the last 2 months, 2.5 months, I was under house arrest.
Which was a great improvement, but was not enough. In addition to that, there were people calling for him to be sent back to prison. So the day before he went to his last trial, he actually had two bags packed. One just in case he were released, and one to go back to prison. It was his prison bag. So that's the tension that we were living with. We really did not know what would happen on that day in October. The morning was going well. One of the major witnesses against him, false witnesses, the case was crumbling, so things were going legally, on the legal side, in a good direction. Came back after lunch, and as he said, all of a sudden, it's clear they're going to convict him here and now. And it's a very large courtroom. It's designed to, it's actually a basketball court, I believe, designed to convict a number of people, try a number of people at the same time. So I'm way behind him in the room, and I realize what's going on, and I thought, Lord, you have to hold his heart.
Noreen,
I can't imagine
how
he's feeling.
I'm assuming you were living in Turkey during this whole time?
Yes.
With your children?
No, the children were in the States.
So let me say, Noreen was arrested with me. We were held together for 13 days. Without any contact with the outside world. So that was a scary time for us. But after that, she was released and I was detained. They kept me. A number of people recommended that she leave Turkey because there was always a risk that they could arrest her again and put her in prison.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, but she stayed there because she was the only person who could visit me, get permission to visit me. They allowed one visit a week for a short time. And she was the only person who could come in to visit me. So she stayed to support me and so that I wouldn't be alone. And this really saved me. But she was doing it at personal risk. So I say about Noreen that she's a lioness. She really fought for me.
I'm going to put in a few things there. I was not alone. We have a church there. We have believers there that surrounded me. So I was not alone. My mother-in-law came for a couple periods and stayed. And I think it was just, I said, Lord, I don't want to go against good advice, but unless you tell me very clearly, I need to stay for Andrew. So anyway, I was there in the courtroom, and this was, as we said, it was kind of an hour of hell where all of a sudden he's being convicted, and we just don't know how long. By this time, they had dropped the charges of, they were saying, attempt to overthrow the parliament, the constitutional order, and the government. So those carried three aggravated life sentences. That was no longer in the picture.
That's a life sentence in solitary confinement with no parole.
Right, and yeah. Three of them. So they had dropped those at the time of when the indictment came out, and now we were down to talking about maximum of 35 years.
Kind of like a life sentence.
Support of terrorism organizations and military espionage.
You know, it almost makes me want to throw up just listening. You hear what I'm saying? You are a learned man. You got a PhD from University of Aberdeen and more. Turkey. We're talking about high-risk missionary work. Middle East, war, and more. How did you guys wind up getting called there?
We were asked by our denomination to go there. And so we did. We didn't really want to go. But after a few years there, we really got really put it on our hearts. And we're so glad. We have no regrets, even after what we've gone through. We have no regrets. Turkey is the largest unevangelized country in the world. So that's a place where people need to share the gospel, and that's what we went for.
Noreen, what were you thinking when it was obvious you guys were going to Turkey?
Yeah, I cried on the plane on the way over because I knew I didn't want to go. I knew my life was done. But really, that's just because we were wanting to go to Egypt and learn Arabic. So we had been asked to go to Turkey, and this was not in our hearts. But it was completely from the Lord, and we have no regrets.
Tell us about the work that God did while you were there.
Yeah, so I wanted to be a teacher. That's why I did graduate work and got ready for that. But we were thrust into a church plant, and then I realized that this is really what God intended us to be there for. We discovered something that we didn't know about ourselves. And so we were involved in five or six different church plants over the years, and starting a house of prayer. And when the war in Syria heated up, and especially when ISIS attacked the Kurds, then they just came over en masse into Turkey. And so we saw this as an opportunity to reach people who had basically been unreachable before. It was a closed access country, Syria. And so now they'd come into Turkey where we had access to them. So we had a team working on the border and also in our own city of Izmir, which was the jumping off point for a lot of people who wanted to take rafts across or boats over to Greek islands. So we were working in both of those areas and trying to reach Syrians. And our hope is that as some of them became believers, that they would return to Syria and be the foundation for the beginning of churches there.
The story unfolding to the imprisonment. How did you wind up getting into sort of that quagmire of being challenged or sentenced for activities that made no sense? I mean, we obviously understand the tension between, say, Christianity and Islam and more. But what led up to this? How did it get there?
I think that when they first arrested us, they were planning to deport us. And another couple
of... They just wanted to get you out of the country because they felt like you were bad seed? What?
They were starting to crack down, and there were a couple of friends of ours who were also involved in refugee work and in churches in Turkey who were deported around the same time. So they arrested us for deportation. But then... they kept me. And so I think that at a very high level in the Turkish government, some people decided to make an example of someone, and I was the person that was available that they chose. Intimidation is a factor, to intimidate other missionaries, have them self-deport. When people find out they can be put in prison, maybe some of them will leave to avoid that risk. Also, I think it would be very intimidating for the local believers, for Turkish pastors to see this happening to a missionary. So I think that was a goal when it started. Let's make an example of him. And then it began to change, and they decided to see what they could get for me. And someone has coined the phrase hostage diplomacy, and that's what Turkey started doing.
The reason for all this is that the Lord has spoken about a spiritual harvest coming to Turkey, and we've been making preparations
for that.
That's what
I wanted to ask you about. Yeah. Tell us
about
the church.
Really,
tell us
about
the church in Turkey. What and why are the significance of missionaries in the Middle East, for example?
So in 2009, the Lord spoke to Andrew and said, prepare for harvest. We didn't expect it to be coming so soon. We don't know when it's coming, but we thought, okay, decades of sowing, and maybe our children and grandchildren will see a harvest in Turkey, because it takes a lot of sowing. But we immediately started to work in a different way and to really seek the Lord for what steps we should take as how should we prepare for harvest. Then when the arrest came, it seemed like all of this was brought to a halt. As the prayer movement gathered and spread and increased and persisted, we realized this was serving the assignment to prepare for harvest in Turkey, because never had Turkey been so prayed for. Never had believers around the world focused in that way.
I'm one of those. Tony Perkins reached out to me from Family Research Council and said, Tim, you need to see what's happening over here with Pastor Brunson.
Yes. I think that the reason why it extended so long is that we think of God as a grandmaster chess player, and he was using these events to pour all of this prayer into Turkey. So I became a magnet for prayer. So this was part of his plan to transform that country. So I say a wave of prayer took me out of Turkey, but a tsunami of prayer crashed into Turkey, and it's going to bring that harvest.
So it really wasn't about us. We were in the middle of it, but it really wasn't about us. And so for those who prayed, and we want to really thank everybody who prayed, I think they will see that actually
God
much more
something.
Was accomplished, because it's going to
there
be
was something
much,
much bigger going on.
God did
yeah.
something. 2 years away from your family, imprisoned, confused. You're a man. I know you're a called man. You're a called family. But you're a man. I read a little bit about some of the emotional journey for you. There was even a time when you were thinking of ending your life or whatever, battling with suicidal thoughts and more. And there's no doubt in my mind Noreen knew that. She probably could see it in your eyes when she came to visit you. Take us there. I mean, what was happening? That's trauma.
Yeah, if I had known that it would be 2 years, then it would be difficult, but then I'd have something to aim for and hold on and
yeah,
just endure
no
for 2 years.
Mean, yeah.
So the difficulty is that I didn't know that until the day I actually got out. And so I was looking at possible life in prison. When people are in difficult times and in a very dark time of the soul, you could say they don't know when it's going to end. And that's, or if it will end, or how it will end. There were a number of pressures on me. First of all, the level of spiritual warfare, because of what God intended to accomplish with this, was pretty high. And I was also in solitary confinement for a time.
Oh.
That was very difficult. Then I was
horrible.
In a cell built for 8 people, but there were over 20 of us. And they were all very, very strong Muslims. And so I was isolated by my culture, by my life experience, and by language, but especially by my faith. So I didn't have someone to encourage me or to pray with, and so I was left with all the questions and doubts I had, talking to myself or talking to God, but not hearing back from Him. So I really despaired, and I thought, at times I thought I was losing my mind, and at other times I thought, I don't know how I can endure this way. I'm very confused. I have a lot of questions, and no, I don't have anyone to ask them. I wondered, is it better? Jesus said, this is a very wrong way of thinking, but Jesus said, you know, if your eye is leading you into sin, then take it out. Better to go into heaven with just one eye than to go into hell. So I was thinking, wouldn't it be better for me to end my life rather than think of possibly, well, going insane or losing my faith or falling off in some way because of the tremendous pressure I'm under and the environment that I'm in, which was like living in a mosque. And it was a very wrong way of thinking, but it made sense to me and the desperation
how
I was
did,
in.
How did you get through? I know prayer is really a centerpiece here. You also wrote a song. I think you wrote these words, God is worthy of my all. Tell us.
Yeah, so I was transferred to a maximum security prison at a very low point where I'd been suicidal. And I read about, somebody said there, you go into a valley of testing, and we assume that we'll just come out of it eventually and victorious. But there are a lot of skeletons, a lot of dry bones in the valley of testing. And this is believers who have not passed their test, who failed in their test. And I started, this really hit me. I started to think, Lord, I don't want to be one of those. I don't want to fail in the tests that you put before me and end up, it's not a matter of losing salvation, but a matter of losing the inheritance, the plans you have for me, the things you plan to accomplish through me. When I was transferred to the new prison, with this in mind, I started to be very proactive in taking steps to cooperate with grace. I did not feel grace. It was an unfelt grace. And this is one of the things I had expected. If I'm suffering for the Lord, then I'm going to have a sense of His presence. I'm going to have a sense of overwhelming grace, of joy. And I didn't have that. But I realized I need to take steps to cooperate with this grace. And with this song, for example, I had just been called into a court session where I was told that basically I had 3 aggravated life sentences, life in solitary confinement without parole, that this is what they wanted for me. And this really knocked me down. I had been focusing myself on God, making that decision. I'm going to every day just focus myself on God and to hold on to Him. And this knocked me out. But then I got up again. I said, I need to run after God. I need to grab onto Him. If I lose my spiritual life, if I lose my relationship with God, I've lost everything. And this is when I wrote this song. So it was just coming from my heart. And I'm thinking of the grief, the thought of being separated from my wife for the rest of my life, of not seeing my children again. And what came out is, but you're worthy of this. You're worthy of my all. You're worthy, worthy of my all. My tears and pain I lift up as an offering. Teach me to share in the fellowship of your suffering. You know, Lamb of God, you're worthy of my all.
That's hard to do.
There's another verse that says, I want to be found worthy to stand before you on that day with no regrets from cowardice, things left undone. And this is what began to drive me. I thought, someday I'm going to stand before Jesus. And I don't want to stand before him with regrets when he says, Andrew, this is what I wanted to do through you. These are the assignments I had for you. And you walked away from them because you were afraid. And I began to focus in on living for the day when I will stand before Jesus and saying, Lord, if this is your assignment for me, if being in prison is your assignment that you have for me, then I want to, it's hard for me to embrace it. I don't want to be in prison, but I want to be willing to serve you in this way. And to accept that assignment. So this is what I started to do every day, is fight towards that point.
We're fighting the clock. We're down to just a couple minutes left. I know you have a brand new book entitled God's Hostage, A True Story of Persecution, Imprisonment, and Perseverance. There's a message in there, a couple of key messages. One, religious persecution is at an all-time high. This is serious. And we need to get this word out to Christians, believers all around the world, to pray for families who are serving, for individuals who just want to stand for Christ and who are going through horrific, horrific situations, conditions, hurt, pain, and more. And they need a message of hope. They need encouragement. What do you say to Christians listening all over our country right now to the broadcast? What do you want them to know about him and about this battle that's going on?
One verse that it became my theme verse in prison was Isaiah 50:10. And basically, God is saying to Israel, who he's put into exile, he says, when you're in darkness, walking in darkness, then trust in the name of your God and lean on him. And he's the one who allowed them to be in that darkness, and he's the one who could rescue them, but he didn't. He left them in that time of darkness and said, lean on me, lean in on me. And so this is what I had to do. I didn't feel grace. I didn't sense God's presence. And I had to learn to stand in the dark, to walk in the dark.
And to be able to keep our hearts unoffended in the process of all this. You know, lean on him. If you have to keep an unoffended heart towards him, and that's really difficult.
You know, as we go, I still remember you being in the Oval Office with the president. And there was a time of prayer in there, and there were tears and moments. It was a special moment, I think, in our culture, especially in this time. Our prayer is that God would continue to raise you up and use this in a legendary way to exalt Christ. And by the way, to encourage people that no matter where we're at, what we're going through, Elohim is our refuge and our strength. He's a present help during times of trouble. Therefore, we won't fear. Though the earth be removed and the mountains be cast into the depths of the sea, he's in the midst of it all. Therefore, we can be still, in verse 10, and know that he is God and that he will be exalted. Thank you for joining us. Know of our prayers and love and encouragement toward the two of you and your family.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, what a powerful broadcast we have heard today here on Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Dr. Tim Clinton's conversation with Pastor Andrew Brunson and his wife, Noreen. Our hope through this interview is that you would hear the reality of persecution of Christians worldwide. Many Christians around the world live in constant fear because of the hostile societies that surround them. You can join us in praying for persecuted believers, and also you can learn more about what you can do to help by visiting our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Now, while you're there, you'll find information about Pastor Andrew Brunson and his recently released book called God's Hostage. That's drjamesdobson.org. Then click onto today's broadcast page. Keeping with the theme of today's broadcast, make sure you also get a copy of Dr. Dobson's most recent newsletter. Every month, Dr. Dobson pens his personal thoughts on issues facing believers. Here in the month of October, he dedicated his letter to the state of the persecuted church. It's a sobering and eye-opening letter that we want you to have, and we want to give it to you without any further financial obligation. So simply call us at 877-732-6825, and a member of our team will be happy to get your information and mail you this publication. Again, that toll-free number is 877-732-6825. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Be sure to join us again on Monday to hear an impactful message from Pastor Greg Laurie. He's one of our more frequent guests, so you know he has something good to share. Be sure to join us again Monday and all of next week right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.